Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
You stupid f***. You, Williamson, I'm talking to you, shit. You just cost me $6,000. $6,000 and one Cadillac. That's right. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, asshole? You f***ing shit. Where did you learn your trade, you stupid f***ing c***, you idiot? Whoever told you that you could work with men?
Could I,
I'm going to have your job, shit. I'm going downtown. I'm going to talk to Mitch and Murray. I'm going to Lemkin. I don't care whose nephew you are, who you know, whose you're sucking on. You're going out. I swear to you, you're going.
Let's get this done.
Anyone in this office lives on his wits. I'm going to be with you in a second. What you're hired for is to help us. Does that seem clear to you? To help us, not to fuck us up. To help men who are going out there to try to earn a living, you fairy. You company man. I'll tell you something else. I hope you rip the joint off. I can tell our friend here a little something might help him to catch you. You want to learn the first rule you'd know if you ever spent a day in your life. You never open your mouth till you know what the shot is. You f***ing child.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you, my friends, for joining us. This is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy and Amusements. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday. If you would like to be part of today's program via the telephone, you can do this. It's honestly just this easy. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. And if you would like to email us, you can do as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn can be reached at dawn@rickemerson.com. dawn@rickemerson.com for Dawn Taylor. Or the chat box is open right now, at this very moment. This instant, now, at rickemerson.com. So again, it's 503-505-6964, or the chat box is open at rickemerson.com, or you can email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up today, we will have a triple, not a single, not a double, but in fact a triple snuff watch. We have a taser watch on the way today, a clown watch as well, because it's just that kind of a day. Let's see, Ryan White from the Oregonian will join us later on as well. We'll have a top five. Dawn Taylor will count down the top five songs to which she broods, seethes, ponders the ruin that her life has occasionally become, in a temporary sense. We'll also have The Week in Geek, courtesy of Mr. Aaron Duran. That's on the way as well. It's 503-505-6964. In addition to all the aforementioned, Dawn Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Monday afternoon.
Crews continue to search in the Kyron Harmon case. A man tells police he shot a robber in his southeast Portland home. And a Woodburn woman finds a grenade.
Fantastic. And love. But mostly the grenade. It's 503-505-6964. The phone is activated as of... There we go. Now. When somebody's calling... What could somebody possibly be calling about? We haven't done anything yet. Don, you tell me, do I answer the phone
or not? Oh, yeah, of course.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. It's going to set the tone for the entire show, Don, so if it sucks, it's on your head, unfortunately.
Okay.
I hate to play that
way. I will take the blame.
All right, hold on, let me just... hello, hi, Rick Emerson Radio Program. How can I help you, sir, madam, as the case may be?
Hi, who is this? This is Noah Levine.
I'm sorry? I never thought I'd have to say this. Can you turn up your radio, sir? Just turn it up as loud as it'll go.
Turn up the radio?
Yeah, just turn it...
Turn down the radio.
No, just turn it as loud as it'll go. That's the only way the phone's going to work.
Oh, it's up.
Yeah, okay. How can I help you?
Is this Rick?
Yes, it is, sir. Yes, how can I help you?
Oh, my gosh, Rick. It's so weird. I've always been told to turn down the radio. Rick Emerson, this is Eastman.
Yeah, this is... I'm sorry?
He's lying to you.
I'm sorry, this is...
Turn down the radio.
Yes, turn it down, please. I'm actually just joshing you, so I'm having a bit of fun.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, turn it all the
this
way down.
This is Eastman.
Yes, Eastman. Okay, Don, you are a longtime listener of the program. You may not be familiar with Eastman.
I am not familiar with Eastman.
Eastman is also known by the name of Noah, and Eastman, who is named after a line from... This is the nerdiest thing ever. Eastman is actually named after something said by Tom Servo in the closing credits of This Island Earth, the Mystery Science Theater version.
That is nerdy.
Where they are talking about how, you know, it says a film provided by Eastman Kodak. Mm-hmm. And he says, Eastman, he came from the east to battle who, Noah?
The Amazing Rando.
The Amazing Rando. Hi, we're retards.
I've been listening back in the day. I started off on WGR. I was with them on... Yahoo Broadcast. I listened in the computer labs. I then went over to CKTV out of Ontario, and I've helped from a lot of stations. The last time I talked to you, Rick, I was commenting on the interview you did with the creator of the Oregon Trail.
Yes, so this really is, for people who have been longtime listeners, this really is just a page out of not just yesteryear, but also the many years before that. So Noah is sort of like... I was going to say like the rings in a tree, but he's not even really like that. He is a guy who has listened and called through every, maybe one of the, he might be one of the only people who can say this, through every single iteration of this program.
Wow.
Early on when we were doing, and by we I mean Bruce Agler, because I can, now it can be told, he was doing a sort of bootleg online version of the show way back in like 98, 99, we were on KOTK, and it was one of those things management didn't really know about because we weren't really supposed to be doing it, but he ran it like out of his office, you know, like on a thing he like built out of tin cans and whatever. Then when I did the national show and we were heard on Yahoo Broadcast, and then every subsequent version of the show, Noah, who in fact lives in Buffalo, New York, am I right?
Well, I lived there right up about 3 years ago. The last time we spoke, I already moved back. But for all intents and purposes, say Buffalo, say New York City. The point is I'm an East Coast fan for 10 years.
And, yeah, he's been listening for a decade and has – and so no matter, you know, in the good times, the down times, the high times, the low times, and all the times in between, Noah, alias Eastman, has been there through all versions of this program, a constant. In a world of changes, he is a thing on which you can rely, and so it was only a matter of time until he called in to this version of the show. How's life, my friend? How have things been?
Oh, life's good. I'm getting ready to settle on my first co-op, but I got to tell you, I'm thrilled to be back on. I went to your website, as I often do, to keep up, and I learned about this iteration, the online show, you know, the first one where, as you said, the format could change, but you are the format. No station can take you off now. It's all by us, the listeners.
That's what I'm saying. How, if I can ask this, and just because I like to track how old I am at any given moment, how old were you when you began listening to the show?
Well... I was a senior in college, and we joked about this, that in the time I've been listening, someone could have started high school and then finished it, and then 4 years later, someone could have started high school and finished college, and you'd made a joke about how much older you felt, and I joked right back saying, you know, Rick, I aged those years, too.
No, it's true.
So
it's
I was
true.
21 when I started.
All right, so 21, now 31, and so what is it you're doing, what are you doing with your life now? Are you on some sort of a career path, or are you just still wandering the world as a learner and an observer of the human condition?
No, I've stayed in my career path. I'm 32. I guess I started when I was 20 because it was the beginning of my senior year, and I turned 21, you know, just before college wrapped up. I work in merchant processing. That's credit cards for businesses.
Excellent.
And I'm about to start with a large division. But I got to tell you, I wrote a few things down because I didn't know if I'd have a lot of time on the radio or if I get too excited and forget. But I want to tell you, thanks for listening throughout the years. I have Untitled, the collector's edition of Almost Famous. I became a fan of that movie because I read about how highly you thought of it, and I became a fan too. That's one thing I always think about. I can thank you for. And you know, Gary Coleman died a while back. I remember one time you were talking about him on your show. One many pieces of gossip that comes here and there. But when I first got this broadcast up, I was hearing at first the Legion of News. I was wondering what it was, and of course it says it's the Legion of News. Stay tuned for our show. And then I heard the Dr. Demento interview, and I thought, he's not interviewing them live, then I realize these are best of, or these are just added value.
Well, yeah, so it's this is just, we should say that we do Legion of News, which is we do basically two shows back-to-back. It sounds way more complicated than it is, but we do a show from noon to one Pacific time that is free to any and all, sort of. It's like the crack dealer giving you the first dose, you know, the no cost, you know, hoping
you'll come back. Microbrew, I heard you mentioning those.
Exactly. And so we did Legion of News, then we do this show, and the Dr. Demento interview is actually something we just did a couple weeks ago, but that live stream runs 24 hours a day. So even when we are not, broadcasting this show live, we've always got something there. So there's the archives page, and then we run a bunch of stuff on the live stream as well. And
I just bought my subscription last night.
God bless you, sir. And if I can remind people of one more thing, this is a thing from many, many, many years ago. I can't now remember the actual content of them that well, but Noah is also known to some small section of the audience who was listening then and listening now, because at one point you were like, as the guy says in Office Space, you had hooked up with two chicks at the same time, and you decided that I needed to see photographs of that, and so you sent along some pictures of the lovely ladies.
Yeah, what about
college? College is, that's the sort of thing that one remembers. College is a time for fun and experimentation, isn't it, Noah?
I'd like to say that was in college, but it was after I was out.
Well, that's fine. Why should the fun stop once you've graduated? At some point in the future, no matter where this program goes, no matter what platform we're broadcasting, no matter whether we are broadcasting on the Internet or some heretofore undiscovered technology, Noah will be there at some point checking in
be a constant. I thought with that segue you were going to suggest I'm going to have to hook up with Noah.
Well, that's part of it as well. That's a signing bonus for subscribing. God bless you, my friend. I'm glad to hear from you. Stay in touch. And it's really, honestly, it is just one of those things where every single version of the show is not totally, it's not fully complete. It doesn't feel like it's been activated and formalized until you check in from New York.
Well, thank you, Rick. I want to ask one of your partners throughout the years, he was a science fiction fanatic. He had his own show. I want to say his name was Tim or Tom or something. He'd always had his pictures with these like green skulls for his show.
Clyde Lewis.
Clyde, that's his name.
Clyde is, Clyde, I believe, I think his show has, I know his show is on the radio in Portland, and I'm fairly certain it can be heard online. If I were you, I would go to, Ground Zero PDX, I think is his website, groundzeropdx.com, and you can find out. I think his show can be heard on the Intertron, sir.
My favorite Dr. Demento routine, which I heard in college coincidentally, was the Frantics Taekwon Leap.
And a boot to the head.
Boot to the head, exactly. Was a legendary one.
Excellent. All right, my friend, we have to roll into the news segment of today's program. You stay in touch. Drop me an email or call us.
Thanks for letting me call in. I'm listening online.
There you go. Thank you. There you go. He came from the East to battle the amazing Rando. Is Eastman, alias Noah. Thank you, my friend. There you go. That's there you go. There's that guy. So
he was so excited at the beginning and sounded a little out of breath.
Yeah,
he sounded just a little bit like NASA scientist William Borecki.
I could. Damn you! I don't think I'm prepared. I don't think right out of the gate I was ready to play anything by William Borecki.
I mean, he didn't later after he relaxed a little bit, but at the beginning he was actually hyperventilating a little bit. He was so excited.
I'm so glad that I interrupted the beginning of the show for that, and I mean that sincerely, because that's one of those things that there's, I don't know, maybe 15% of the audience who sort of knows what I'm talking about when I reference some of those earlier calls that he's made. But every single version of the show, that guy, and he just discovered us on Yahoo Broadcast kind of way back in the early days of the show, and he has called every single version of the show at some point, and he always announces himself by saying, "It's Eastman," which is a joke that we made one time early on in the very first time he ever called the show 10 goddamn years ago because I'm ancient.
Well, and so. A couple of people in the text box have chimed in to type, "The Amazing Rando," all in caps.
See?
With exclamation points.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it's we're just the one big dysfunctional family, Don. That's all right. Well, in any event. Have we already done the news headlines?
Yes.
All right. And
no.
Yes, we did. We should pick one.
Yes, we did.
Okay, there you go.
It happened.
Clown watch on the way. Taser watch on the way. Snuff watch times three. A triple snuff watch coming up today. Ryan White from the Oregonian will be here. We'll talk about Dawn Taylor's top five songs to which she will brood, seethe. We have Aaron Duran's Week in Geek coming up and so forth. And by the way, that guy's saying, you know, when he tuned in earlier, he heard the Legion of News. Today was probably the single worst day that anybody ever could have done that. if you had not heard the Legion of News in the past, if you hadn't heard that show and you said, well, today's the day, after putting it off low these many, many months, I've decided to tune in at noon. I'm not going to wait till 1 o'clock. I'm not going to wait until the Rick Emerson show takes the airwaves. I'm actually going to find out what this other supplementary show they do is. You heard about 12 minutes of Dawn vamping, and which is... Vamping is just sort of a... Vamping is just slang for just kind of just making stuff up as you go along. Just killing time. Filling time. Because we started the show, and first of all, I got here a little late, for which I apologize. It's not a thing I try to do. I used to be so good about getting to the studio and doing all my prep here. But, of course, that's when we had, like, a whole building we were working in. You know, but now, about half the week, Sarah and Greg are here before us. It's not like it's their fault. But they're here before us, and they're actually taping the show before we do, which means I'm not able to get into the studio to prep. So I've just actually started prepping at home, which is fine, except that I leave home around 11:30, get here around 11:45. I have been trying to email you my stuff in advance, mm-hmm. say, like, hey, here's the show prep and whatever, and I'll be there like 11:45. We'll talk, we'll kibitz, and then we'll begin. That works really, really well, except for a day like today, where A, I got stuck in traffic, B, I had to stop at Portland Music to pick up a the screen thing for the microphone. C, got stuck in traffic on the way from Portland Music to here. And then D, walked into the studio and realized that there was some sort of shrieking feedback playing on the live stream that I had to fix. And while doing that, didn't notice that the actual power, the phantom power in the back had been turned off to two of the three microphones. So we start Legion of News today. We come right out of the gate, and there's just a bunch of weird thumping and, like, bonking sounds as we're trying to get the microphones to work. And Dawn has to just sort of freestyle the first 10 minutes of the show by herself while I'm kind of futzing around with the all of the cords trying to figure out exactly why it is the mic isn't functioning. It's awesome.
And gesticulating and swearing under your breath. And yes.
Meanwhile, Dawn just goes, I guess I'll just keep talking and whacking the microphone with the back of my hand. All right. Anyway, it's a fantastic start to the week.
Comedy
is what it
gold.
Is. It really was. By the way, all of this morning, the me driving along and getting stopped in traffic and getting stopped in traffic, I guess the second time, that all followed me realizing this morning that the tags on my car are expired. So every single time I'm stopped in traffic, I just do that thing of checking my rearview mirror and waiting to see if the man is going to come pull me over for having outdated tabs, which... That in turn means that I get to go to the thing of sitting at the emissions place and having them test the emissions for my car, which I think they only do now like 3 days a week or something. I think they've now closed it on Mondays and Tuesdays, because why would you want to have that service open 5 days a week? That would just be convenient. And I think it actually is open, it's like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or something, which means I can either do it before the program and then risk being late again, or I can get done here at 4 and then try to speed to, like, Columbia Boulevard or whatever the hell it is and try to get it done there at 4:30 before they close at 5. Because God knows that it won't be filled with other people trying to get their emissions done. It's just the worst thing on earth. All right. Well, and uneven. So that's all on the way. How was your weekend, Dawn?
Not too bad. I spent much of Saturday sneezing my head off. So, but because I thought for sure I had caught a cold or was coming down with the flu or something, so I was panicking about that because, you know...
You don't want to be sick and bringing your filth to the studio.
Exactly. But as you'll recall, on Thursday, I was coughing and kind of snorky, and that caught up with me on Saturday. It turns out it was just allergies. But it was so bad, my husband actually stayed home. Neither of us went to his company picnic, which I thought I was going to have to go to. Which I was dreading.
Were you feigning illness? You can tell me.
No, I really wasn't. Was ready. And then yesterday I came in here and brought us a bookcase for our studio.
I saw that. So now the studio is one more step to not looking like some sort of a dorm room after a tornado.
Because people listening may not be aware that things were just kept appearing in the studio in a large pile against one wall because we didn't have any shelving.
Well, it's the thing is that, how do I put this? So we share the studio, as you guys probably know, with Sarah and Greg. They do Fun Employment Radio, which can be found at funemploymentradio.com. Now, sometimes that show, it tapes before us. Sometimes it tapes after us in the afternoon, which I think is the case today. But in any event, we're all sharing one studio. And everybody sort of develops their own approach or their own style for how a workplace is kept. And you either become really laissez-faire about things just being, collecting and just bric-a-brac of all varieties sort of stacking up, or you become real anal retentive about it. I myself became real anal retentive about it early in my career. So from way back, this is my first days as a DJ. Whenever I would go into the studio, the first thing I would do is just clean it. I would just clean it just high and low. I would just put everything away. I would sort. I would file. I would stack. I would organize. I would, just put all the magazines away. I put all the CDs away. I put all the pens and pencils away. I clean up the countertop, which is just like a losing battle if you work at a radio station, because radio people are just scum. They're just the filthiest human beings on earth. They're just repellent, loathsome individuals, all of them. Just do some to a greater degree than others. And then it was always a point of pride with me, by the way, that when I got done with my shift at a radio station, when I was finished for the day, the studio was what they call zeroed out, meaning that everything on the control board was turned back and put to its original position, everything was turned off, everything was put away, so it was effectively just, it was like the studio was brand new. You would never know that I had been there, because I figured that way, somebody's coming in, they can arrange the studio exactly the way they like. And that is how I've sort of been at the workplace ever since then. Sarah is not quite that way. Sarah is, she has a more casual and relaxed attitude toward things in the studio and towards, like, knickknacks and paddywhacks and things just sort of collecting and just piles of stuff and stacks of crap. And she and I worked together for long enough that I didn't want to impose my whole system on her, and she didn't try to impose her thing on me, but we came to a sort of uneasy truce in terms of the way the studio was decorated, to where the studio was about half clean and about half craptastic. And so it is here, but the problem is we just didn't have any shelves, so all of her stuff that was just sort of collecting, her and Greg's stuff, was just piling up in the corners. And it really did sort of look like a mini Dignity Village, just sort of sitting over like on the one far side of the room. So Don was good enough to bring in a bookcase over the weekend. So now the studio is one more step toward looking. What did Bill Oakley call it when he came in to be on Fun Employment? He said it's all strangely corporate in here. So, we're on our way, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, we have all the beer now is located on a bottom shelf, with a little fridge, and then many bottles of room temperature beer on the bottom shelf. Then just a sort of a stack of crap on the second shelf and bags of crap on the top shelf.
Well, a place for everything and everything in its place, Don.
And
that's
somewhere in there is my box that I brought in because that's all I really wanted. All I really needed was like one container that I can put my stuff in so I know where my stuff is. That's really all I want.
You just got to plan your work and work your plan, Don.
Yes.
All right. Without further ado, let's do this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Crews set up a search base at a rock quarry in northwest Portland and combed fields along Cornell Road over the weekend in search for missing 7-year-old Kyron Horman. It's been reported that a tip from Dee Dee Speicher, the friend of Kyron's stepmother, Terry Horman, sparked the search of at least one area. In the past, Kyron's birth parents have suggested Speicher wasn't cooperating with investigators.
Dee Dee Speicher is going to be my porn name, by the way.
That is a good porn name.
So they're combing the fields? That's always a bad sign.
Well, and another report I read, they refer to it here as a rock quarry in northwest Portland, and in another report I read, it's an area where Dee Dee Speicher was gardening, supposedly. So I'm not sure what
I don't understand. How can it be both a rock quarry and a garden?
I don't know.
All right.
Meanwhile, three or more friends of Terry Moulton Horman, some using fake names, bought prepaid cell phones in the days after Kane Horman moved out of the family home. Sources say a number of Terry's friends bought cold cell phones, and at least one of those friends told investigators they did so.
Cold cell phones?
Yeah, that's what they call them, cold cell phones.
Is that what the kids call them now?
Yeah.
Is that what the young people out on the corners call them?
That's what they call them, yes. And at least one of these friends told investigators they did so because they felt their regular phones were being monitored and they wanted to ensure some privacy.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. It's not like that's an unreasonable assumption at this point.
No, that was why I was hoping we'd have a chance to talk about that a little bit because, that's one of those stories that gets, put on the news, with, of course, without any comment because, it's journalism. But when like, ooh, it sounds so suspicious. These people bought, like, you know, brand new cell phones under fake names. Like,
Probably not even under a fake name. They just probably went to, like, 7-Eleven or something.
Well,
and
some
just
of
bought,
them,
like, a disposable cell phone.
And so some of them used fake names, though, to sign up for the
I would assume that the police are monitoring my phone calls at that point.
And
I mean,
and they're undoubtedly being harangued by the same news organizations
that
are now reporting this as being suspicious.
That's the other thing, is that the media are just digging up every phone number for these people they possibly can, which I understand. Look, the media does what it does, as Whistler says to Buffy toward the end of season 2, you know, there's life and there's what you do back to it, except I'm mangling the quote, and it's not Whistler who says it, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, so the media is going to do what they do, which is to try to get you on the phone and get some sort of incriminating or embarrassing quote out of you. And the neighbors are going to do what they're going to do in return, which is to find a cell phone that isn't linked to them so that the media and or the cops can't call them and bother them. There's really nothing suspicious about that whatsoever. And plus, one of the fundamental rights of America, in this country, is just to be left alone. And it is increasingly hard to keep your private information and your contact information out of this sort of public realm. So I have no problem with any of that. It doesn't seem suspicious to me in the slightest.
Well, and one of, as an example, is one of my Facebook friends, a fellow who added me, and so I added him back, is a local newsman who is...
Is it Carl Click?
I'm not going to say who it is, but he's blogging. It's not Carl Click, though, but he's someone that I've never met personally. But he's blogging and stuff, you know, in support of his news organization here locally in Portland. And he posts these things to Facebook. Like there's one last night, and I will read this to you verbatim. It pops up.
Let me understand this. So you're not identifying. You won't tell me who he is, but you're going to read one of his Facebook postings verbatim.
Right. Because just to give you an idea, though, it's like this guy, again, this guy is a newsman with a local news organization. And this is what he posts to Facebook. Interviewed a weeping mother at Chiron's Wall of Hope. She doesn't even know the family, but was moved to tears by the outpouring of support. Hear what she says tonight at 10.
Awesome.
Like, it's just... grasping at straws.
You know what I like? I just like the shamelessness of the media. And by the way, I'm not excluding myself from that. I mean, we really are part and parcel of that same phenomenon. So it really is. It's just that they just fully embrace what they are, which I sort of salute in a way. You know, I mean, there's no false piety or anything there. There's no pretense. I mean, they do what they do, and they just sort of revel in it. And I mean, you can't fault them for that. At least I don't. So God bless you, anonymous local newsman. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A Southeast Portland resident, by the way, this is an update from a story we covered on Legion of News earlier about a man who was found dead with a gunshot wound in his head. In a Southeast Portland home. A Southeast Portland resident told police he shot a man trying to rob him Sunday night. The resident called 911 himself, and when police arrived, they found Tyrone Lee Mullen, 39, dead inside the home from a gunshot wound. The resident was cooperating with police and has not been charged with a crime at the time, according to Sergeant Peter Simpson with the Portland Police Bureau. The home is located in the 3800 block of Southeast 154th Avenue, which we were thinking was near Stark, but I think that's actually closer to Powell.
I was just hoping it was near Victory Bingo.
And the alleged robbery occurred around 9:30 p.m. Homicide detectives and forensic specialists are working together to process the crime scene. Police have not said if Mullen had a criminal record, and the name of the resident has not been released.
All right. So this is but the guy claims that it was an intruder.
Right.
It was just some guy busted into his house, and he got what for it? The barrel of a gun. Well done, homeowner. I hope now. It may turn out that this story is being misrepresented, or that there's more than meets the eye, or that we're not being told all the facts. But presuming it is as it was presented. Guy breaks into home, homeowner gets gun, shoots intruder, then we ought to send that guy a fruit basket. We should start a tradition on the show. We should just begin to, you know, this is a thing I tried to do, by the way, at CBS.
Just start sending fruit baskets?
I tried to do this at CBS and they wouldn't let me. This is one of the few times when CBS just flat out refused to let me do something. And it was when we tried to send a fruit basket. There was a guy who had busted into somebody's home. And these are the, as Kevin Bacon would say in A Few Good Men, these are the facts of the case and they are undisputed. There was a guy who had busted into a home in blah, 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 Portland. I forget where. And he was just like ransacking the joint, and the neighbors called the cops and they said, hey, we think there's somebody busting into our neighbor's home. The lights are on, but they're out of town. You know, we think it's a burglar. And the cops showed up, and sure enough, there's some jackass burglarizing the home. And the cops say, hey, you, we're the cops. Boyo, come on out of there. You know, drop your gun and come out. And the guy, you know, I got a gun. And the cops said, look, we got lots of guns, and we'll use them too. And so, like, drop your gun and come out. And the guy came out and charged at the cops with his gun, and they just lit his ass up. I mean, they shot him like 80 times. And I tried to send them a fruit basket. It was like on behalf of a grateful community, you know, like thanks for killing a guy who had it coming. The world is a better place without. And CBS, they just like flat out told me. They just said, we will, no. They just say, you cannot send. But there's no one to tell me no now. So I'm going to begin doing that. Starting with the next, we should start with this guy, actually. You know, if it turns out that the facts of the story are as he presents them, you know, some guy breaks into your house, that guy gets whatever he gets, and F him. So if it turns out this is true, I'm going to send that guy a little something.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Just attention, cops. A fruit basket could be coming your way the next time you take out the trash, if you know what I'm saying. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A grenade found in a closet of a Woodburn home Sunday sparked evacuations of surrounding houses as police safely removed the explosive device. Liliana Dickinson said she was cleaning out her late husband's closet when she found the grenade. She said her husband was a member of the American Legion and kept a cabinet full of guns and ammunition in the house.
I got a grenade in the closet.
When he died, she got rid of the weapons, she said, but on Sunday she found a grenade that apparently she'd missed the first time around.
I like the idea that there were so many grenades she actually couldn't keep track of them all. It was just sort of a, well, you know, 15, 16, who can even remember sometimes?
I have a little audio here.
Awesome. All right. Here's a...
Terrible could have happened. I'm glad it didn't. They gave me a card and they told me, if you ever find anything else, please call us. But I told them, I says, I hope I never have to see you again.
What sort of accent is that? I can't quite pin it down.
Her first name is Liliana, so I have no idea.
What was the last name? Well, I guess it doesn't really
Dickinson.
Tell you.
No,
all right. No. Well, okay. Did he just die or has he been dead?
He's been dead. I have
all
no
right.
idea how long
he's But she's
he
just
said.
Now getting around to cleaning out his stuff. And yeah. He had, quote, a cabinet full of guns?
Yeah. At one point, he had a cabinet full of guns and ammunition. And she got rid of the weapons after he died. But on Sunday, she happened across a stray grenade that she had missed somewhere.
But, I mean, how would you – what would – Let me ask this. Well, okay. I guess there's really no way to answer this because it would just be speculating. But, I mean, how would you happen across a grenade that you would miss the first time around? Because that implies that it was – you were going to get something that you needed that was not grenade-oriented and that sitting right next to it was a grenade.
Well, she said she was cleaning out a closet. So the thing is, he may have had a closet – she may have had an area, a cabinet, like maybe a gun safe – with guns and ammunition. When he died, she went and got rid of the guns. Now she was cleaning out a closet full of his things, and there was
okay,
a grenade.
So it wasn't like they were kept with the peaches or something?
No.
All right, okay, fair enough.
Bomb squad members said the grenade's fuse was ruined, and so the device would not have exploded anyway. Yeah. But it was... And Woodburn police also responded to a report of a suspicious device Sunday at the city's aquatic center. Whatever it was...
There's an aquatic center in Woodburn?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a very nice one.
Really?
Yes.
I thought that place was just nothing, but I thought it was just like the Smucker's plant.
Yeah, they got all that money from the outlet store mall, and so they must rake in the taxes off of that. So
all right, then.
They can build an aquatic center.
Let's do like two more here, and then we'll take a break. We'll have Ryan White from the Oregonian join us on the other side.
Well, let's do our clown watch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is your clown watch. And what better way to start the week, really, when you think about it? Here is your clown watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hey now. Here is Dawn Taylor with your clown watch.
A 43-year-old Bethlehem Township woman told police she was forced Friday by an unknown man to rob a bank near her home using a fake bomb fashioned from a can of soup and bags of rice to threaten tellers. Carolyn Ann Williams wore a clown suit, red nose, gloves, and a scarf around her lower face when she robbed the KNBT bank. Williams showed the teller a yellow gift bag that she said contained a bomb and also said her two children would be killed if she didn't bring back enough cash. When a teller emptied her drawer of cash into the bag and slid it across the counter, Williams said it wasn't enough and told two other tellers to also fill the bag with bills. Williams remains in Northampton County Prison under $500,000 bail. Police said more than $7,000 was stolen during the robbery, and money was found inside Williams' car when she was arrested in a nearby municipal complex. According to court records, inside Williams' car, police said they also found a cardboard box that contained a bag of soup with the label removed and two bags of rice. Police said the device was fashioned to look like an explosive device.
Wait a minute, let's understand this. So let's get back to the clown portion of this.
Yes, she was dressed as a clown, and they found, in addition to the fake bomb in her car, they also found her clown suit, clown wig, clown shoes, multicolored leggings, oversized clown sunglasses, and two loaded handguns.
So they're, the clown costume just isn't complete without some sort of death device. So she's claiming that she was then forced to do this.
That's what she says.
All right, okay, this is, is she a professional clown?
That I don't know.
I mean, I'm wondering, it's like, why you would just sort of have all that stuff sitting around. It's not that you know what I mean? It's like, unless you worked as a clown on the weekend or something, what are the odds that you would just have that stuff sitting there?
I'm not sure, because it seems to be sort of a common thing where people rob places dressed as clowns. So I'm wondering if maybe clown costumes are either like the cheapest costumes if you go to the party store, or because they're just like one size fits all because they're big baggy clown pants.
Yeah, I suppose maybe that's it. See, I hadn't really thought about that. It's sort of a utilitarian costume in that sense. In that, the odds are it's going to fit almost anyone.
Or maybe you're thinking that if you're dressed as, say, I don't know, a ninja walking down the street in the middle of the day, people
somebody's
might
gonna
notice
it.
But if you're a clown, they think maybe you're on your way to a party.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that. The clown costume is probably best. I'm not saying you should rob banks, but if you're going to do it, it seems like a clown costume is your best bet, because it is a costume that it's a costume that doesn't draw much attention to itself, because it is probably the most frequently used elaborate costume.
Right. So
that's a really good point.
Hey, look, a clown.
He must be on his way to a bat mitzvah.
Right.
But then, no, on her way to do so. She's sort of hot in a butch-looking kind of way. I mean,
In a clowny sort of way.
Did I ever tell you about the time that this, I was driving back from, I don't know, some damn place in Beaverton. But I was, it was on, whatever, the 26th, and it was at night. And I was heading back into Portland on the 26th, and it was going by like the zoo. You know, you're sort of coming in, and then there's the you go by the zoo place, and you go by, there's that funeral home on the left, and it's right before you bank to the right and you head past downtown Portland. So I'm driving along, and there's a car pulling up next to me, and it's late at night, it's maybe midnight or something, pitch black outside, and there's that thing where when a car is, I think it's just human nature, when a car is next to you and you see it in your peripheral vision, you don't really pay that much attention. But if it stays there for a while, just out of curiosity, just out of an interest in your fellow humans, you turn and you see who's driving next to you. And I turned to the right because the car had stayed there for like 30 seconds. And I thought, well, let's see what life's rich pageant has brought me tonight. And I turned to the right while I'm driving, and I swear to God, there was a clown in the car. Now,
You're just saying this to bother me.
No, on the side. And I mean, I'm sure there was a perfectly logical explanation for it, because on the side of the car, it actually said, like, you know, children's parties or whatever. So the clown was probably coming from some sort of shindig. But it was like Jilly the Clown, which made me think of Jilly Rizzo, who's that guy that was hung out with Sinatra and was like an enforcer, sort of a knee breaker. But it was like Jilly the Clown or something on the side of the car. But I look over, and it was a clown just sort of, you know, in like a Honda Civic, just kind of driving along next to me. And I just sort of, I mean, I must have been staring, and at some point, and here's a phrase you didn't think you'd hear today, at some point, the clown noticed me in its peripheral vision, and the clown just sort of, Jilly the Clown, turned to its left and looked at me, and then just sort of slowly waved.
Ah. God.
It's the best thing ever. Oh, it was, I mean, it was really, it was so terrifying, but it was.
I would have wet myself.
It was awesome, though. It was terrifying, but it was great, because I immediately knew that I was going to tell that story to every single person I knew that it was terrified of clowns, and that they would maybe appreciate it is the wrong way to put it, but that they would, they get a charge out of that story. Wouldn't you say that's been effective, Don?
Yes, very effective.
There's your clown watch for Monday. Awesome. All right, we'll take a break here and Coming up around the corner, we'll have Mr. Ryan White and the Oregonian. We're going to talk about Dawn Taylor's top five as well. Top five songs to which she broods. Still on the way, Taser Watch, Triple Snuff Watch. And coming up right now, it is Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Stay there. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Aaron Duran here of geekinthecity.com with your newest installment of The Week in Geek.
Fight!
First, a little something for Rick. On Wednesday, as part of their Summer of Arcade, Xbox Live will debut Monday Night Fights. A humorous, over-the-shoulder, class-based shooter, Monday Night Fights is the perfect blend of team player strategy and that icon of 80s arcade destruction, Smash TV. Now go kill for fun and sponsors.
Fatality.
Sticking with games, Billy Mitchell, the star of King of Kong and connoisseur of cheesy American flag ties, has once again claimed the top spot on Donkey Kong, and just because he had nothing better to do, Donkey Kong Jr. Stopping his game of Donkey Kong immediately after beating Hank Chen's score, the Metaloon in shape Mitchell has also reinforced his title as world-class dick. In my constitutionally protected opinion, so please don't sue me.
Babality.
Finally, Portlanders have a chance at over $1,000 in prizes at the Robot Beauty Pageant this coming Sunday, August 15th at the Fez Ballroom, with categories in overall costume design, presentation, poise, and originality. You can learn more at mega-robot.com. I am Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and you have been listening to The Week in Geek.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You know, the thing about the 503 and the 505 is I'm always afraid that I'm going to transpose them. And I have to do the thing of spot-checking it by visualizing the number in my head before I say it out loud. 503-505-6964. You know what I just realized on the side of the Dennis Miller talking action figure that we have here in the studio? I'm looking at the side of the box that faces me, and it says, collect both Dennis Miller action heroes.
Well, there's two.
I mean, there's many absurdities contained in that statement, but the idea that there's actually two of them.
You have the one that does not use explicit language.
Oh, really?
There's apparently also an explicit language model.
Rick Emerson doesn't work blue. Let's see what it has to say. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Dennis Miller talking action hero doll.
Hey, you know Kim Jong-il in North Korea must be a bad guy because you usually don't get to lead up a country when you look that freaky. What's with the hair? He's like a Chia dictator.
Okay, there you go. Once again, the Dennis Miller talking action doll.
He gets paid for that.
It's the, I suppose. Yeah, but it's only radio money at this point. It's 503-505-6964 is still to come. Triple Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, and Dawn Taylor's Top 5, the top 5 songs to which she broods. Brood sounds like an unpleasant word, you know, in that context. Sounds sort of...
Well, it's like the David Cronenberg film, The Brood.
Yes. Also, Ryan White from the Oregonian will join us here in just a moment. Dawn Taylor's track and the following headlines for you on this Monday.
4 men are presumed drowned in an Idaho reservoir. A man is arrested after attacking a soda machine with a hatchet. And Colorado police officers have to cover up their tattoos.
Fantastic. Joining us now from the Oregonian music editor, Ryan White, on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Awesome.
Here's the thing about you. When I went out of the kitchen green room now to bring you in, I said, how are you? And you said, tired. But you... don't take this the wrong way. You sort of have the effortlessly yet sort of charmingly rumpled thing down to just like a science. And I think Don will back me up on this. Mm. You always look as though you are about to go open for Jackson Browne somewhere.
My mother-in-law was here a few weeks ago, and she was looking for things to do around the house one day. And as I was leaving to go to the office, she goes, maybe I'll iron your shirts.
Man,
I said,
no.
And I said, no, that's my thing.
No, my.
Steve Dean one time, he's like, why don't you ever tuck in your shirt? I said, it's like you with your mustache. It's just not what I do. And then he went and shaved off his mustache.
Did he really?
Yeah, he doesn't have it right now.
I can't even
picture. He goes back and forth with it lately.
I can't even picture that guy without his mustache. It's you know what Steve Dean looks like? Steve Dean looks like, he kind of looks like your next door, like your next door neighbor or the guy who lives across the street who's a good guy, but is sort of mean to you at the same time. He is the kind of guy that, you know, that yells at you to keep your stuff off his lawn or something. You know?
Sometimes he has to do that in a civic sense. It's kind of his job.
I mean, I've had we've done these shows in Outlook Portland where it's Steve Dean and Anna Griffin on at the same time, and Steve has that thing where it's like this barely concealed hostility toward me that I can never quite tell. I can't really ever tell if it's actual hostility or if it's sort of like an endearing hostility, you know? Like he's sort of...
I think that's how he is. He's the Metro columns. He has to be a little grumpy.
Yeah, it's like he sort of likes me, but like in a curmudgeonly way. Like he might have to body check me at some point just because, just on general principles. He also looks a little bit like Keenan Wynn, who's... so if you guys know who that is, which is a little disconcerting. He's sort of like a Keenan Wynn, Mike Ditka kind of hybrid. So in any event. So what is going on in your world? You're going to Pickathon, which we were talking about this a bit before we came on the air today. But it's like a campout thing, which I don't think I was privy
to. Yeah, there's, you know, out there in Happy Valley where they started, you know, a number of years ago, whenever it was that McMansions came into vogue and they started building those out there. There's this... the Pendarvis couple, this hippie couple, and they've got 60, 70 acres out there, something like that. And, you know, pretty much all year round, the volunteers and the organizers for Pickathon are out there doing work parties, maintaining it, and you camp all back through the woods, and it's 3 days. I mean, I camped out there on Friday night, and, you know, I was in they've got a little barn they call the Galaxy Barn, and Langhorne Slim was playing in there until 2 a.m.
Langhorne Slim.
Really good. Just moved here, actually. He's from Philadelphia originally. Another one of those guys who proves that just because you play acoustic instruments doesn't mean you have to stare at your shoes and
right.
sing in a falsetto.
Right.
There's a great photo on Oregon Live that Tom Boyd, one of our photographers, took. They were playing they got stages all over this place. There's one way out in the woods. And they were playing a set out there on Saturday afternoon, and his banjo player busted a finger open, and there's just blood all over the banjo.
Blood on the banjo seems like an album title that has to happen. You ought to just be registering that domain name or something right
probably,
now.
Probably. So, Tom got a great photo of it, though.
Did you stay? So is this the thing where, like, did you stay the night? Did you, like, pack up, and you go out there, and you're there for, you know?
Yeah, liberation? I went out, and, I went out, and I set up a tent on Thursday afternoon when I went out to do just a couple of quick last-minute interviews with some people that were wandering around doing the final set. And it's funny because I got out there and they were setting up, they were testing the PA system on the two main stages, and they were playing classical music across this entire thing, and they went from that to Prince. And I ran into one of the organizers. I was like, you should invite Prince out here one year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they don't have the budget for. But yeah, so you set up, and then, you know, on Friday night, I slept for 4 hours drunkenly on a 45-degree angle in a tent that was too small for me because you know, a two-person $20 tent from Fred Meyer means two people the size of, like, my wife and my daughter, not me.
And with a rock jammed into the small of your back.
Oh, I wish it had just been a rock.
I mean, that's the thing about camping is, it was funny. I was at for reasons that are long and pointless, I was at this baby shower not this past weekend, but 10 days ago, the Saturday's back. And, it's the thing where, my wife just, she's it's a Northwest thing, I guess, in this instance. But I mean, the world is filled with people who like to camp and hike and fish and do things on the outdoors. And I'm just not one of those people.
The world is also full of people who like Marriott points and Hyatt Honors cards.
That's what I'm saying. It's like I am a man of the great indoors. But here, especially in Portland, I always just feel outnumbered. So we're all sitting at this table, and we're having dinner or whatever, and we're getting ready to sit around and watch the pregnant chick unwrap a bunch of stuff. And but my wife is talking about some big camping expedition that she's getting ready to go on. She's going to be hiking to some damn place, and then I don't know, and then sleeping on an anthill somewhere or whatever. And there was the only other person there at the table who was not in the camping was this chick that was from Manhattan. So it's just sort of assumed that she would not be in the camping. And she and I formed this instant bond about the do not wish to camp. And I was making – and but the thing is, it's a thing you almost can't – you don't want to say out loud that you don't like to camp, because then it's like – for me, it is like – and Dawn probably experiences this too. It is like saying out loud that you just have opted not to have kids. Because then people want to know why, and then I will say, and I need to come up with I need to start saying I'm barren or something, or just that my testes were saturated with radiation at some point, and so I feel like it's going to work out poorly. I don't want to have a kid with five hands. Because I always just say, well, I don't think I'd be a very good parent, which really is that's really one of the big reasons. Because then that just invites a whole lot of, no, you'd make a great pair. And then I find myself in the position of having to demonstrate that I'm, in fact, a terrible person. And it becomes just this awkward, ongoing conversation.
I generally tell people, I come from a long line of women who were terrible mothers, and that curse ends with me.
Yeah, that's I will sometimes say that most people who were bad parents don't realize it. I am one of the few who recognizes that, and I'm going to act accordingly. But it's in a similar way, it's like saying that I don't camp, because then people say, well, you just haven't done it in the right way. And then they always want to tell me about some place where they camp or some particular kind of gear that they use. And I just have to cut him off and just say, no, it's just not going to happen. It's not a thing I find enjoyable.
My husband is from these here parts, and he wants to camp. He always talks about how much he wants to go camping, and I always just say, no.
Yeah.
Your mom has a timeshare. Let's just go out the coast and look at the ocean from a living room, with a couch.
That's sort of my thing. Like, if the others was carpeted and it had fluorescent lighting and air conditioning, I would be – if someone made you do that, if someone told you, like, look, tonight, I don't care what – it doesn't matter. You have no choice. You are going to go sleep outside on a pile of stones and be savaged by insects while you attempt to get some shut-eye, you'd think that you were being punished. But it's like the whole Mark Twain thing of, because you're not being forced to do it, it is therefore allegedly enjoyable.
We had some friends over for brunch yesterday, and he was talking about he just bought an 1,800-square-foot three-room tent because when he camps, he likes to take enough with him that he, doesn't feel like he's camping. I'm like, well, then why not just stay home?
Yeah.
Now you've got to haul all that crap out there and then pack – I don't want to pack up my house to go away for the weekend. I'll just stay at my house or go to a hotel.
Yeah, and I just remember those long mornings when it doesn't matter how, like, if you're sleeping outside in a tent or something, it doesn't matter how much of you bring with you. You are always just like bone ass cold in the morning at some point, and you wake up, and then you just walk out of the tent, and like, is your dad nude crouching by the fire, trying to make some cowboy coffee or something in the morning. You're just sitting to yourself going, God damn, my life is terrible.
Well, then on Friday night, I mean, it was the deal where I think I wandered into the tent about 3 a.m. and I hadn't set anything up. I'd just thrown all my stuff in there and then gone about listening to music. So I'm sitting in there drunk trying to inflate this air mattress, and every time I set it down, the little plastic plug pops out, and it's so it's blow it up, pops out, blow it up, pop out, burp, hiccups, drunk, annoyed.
just wad it up into a ball and use it as a pillow.
Because I didn't bring one of those.
That's the thing, is you ended up just wadding it up and using it like some sort of like a plasticky, uninflated beach ball of a pillow.
Half the tent was on a 45-degree angle, and when I set it up, I was like, well, I can sleep on the half that's not. except I didn't account for the fact that I was longer than the tent, and the only way to stretch out would have been to go diagonally. So now I'm at this weird kind of corkscrew angle.
God damn. It's just miserable. And so I think we're all of a piece here. We're all of the same mind. It's that thing of – you were talking about inflating the deal. It's one of those things where it takes a particular kind of coordination that I would imagine, especially if you're plastered, is difficult to attain, because those things have always got the little diaphragm valve thing where you got to pinch down on them to blow inside. And so you got to stick your whole mouth around it, and then it's made of this weird slippery plastic that then makes it impossible to get the little cork part, you know, the little stopper into the actual plastic. Have you ever had this? Have you ever had one of those like air mattresses that you tried to inflate, and it was clearly – you didn't realize this until it was too late. It was clearly meant to be inflated with one of those like generator things that plugs in.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise it takes like 9 hours, and it's got like a brass fitting on the end, which means you get this weird puckery sour thing going on with your lips at the end of it. It's just a living hell.
You go tearing through the closets because you're convinced you've got one of those pumps there for a football that you had when you were 8 years old.
But it only has like the little needle point adapter on the end of it.
But how was the music, Ryan White, at Pickathon? The music.
The music was great. It's, you know, I've hung out with the organizers when they sit around and they go through hundreds of CDs, and like it's kind of by music geeks for music geeks, and they design it in a way that everybody plays a couple of different sets. So you can see them at different times in different areas. And, you know, it's casual enough that the musicians are all still hanging out watching other musicians.
Right.
Which is half of the fun, is kind of watching them. I was Willie Vlauten, a novelist and the songwriter for Richmond Fontaine here. And they really just writes dark, dark stuff. I was sitting during the Richmond Fontaine set with some of the people from the Mercury, and they were doing fake Willie Vlauten tweets. And the best one was, my car broke down in the parking lot of a strip club on the way to my son's birthday party. Fortunately, my mom was working.
Awesome.
but so Willie was sitting there watching the Stone River Boys, this band from Austin, Texas, play, you know, that unique and great brand of Texas kind of barroom rock, and with, you know, the kind of style that says that they've played in bars that actually do have chicken wire in front of the stage. And Willie looks at the bass player and goes, should we play our happy set? Which there isn't one. And I looked at him, I was like, would that be the Richmond Fontaine Gospel Hour? Which would kind of be the one where, you know, like God drives drunkenly into a casino and runs over the blackjack table or something.
All right, then. How long has this thing been going on? Because it's an annual event, right?
Yeah, this is the 12th year, and it's gotten, you know, this year they were expecting, by the time yesterday was over, to have 2,500 paid for the weekend, which is, last year was 1,700, so that's almost a 50%. Deal. It pretty much worked out. I know we talked a little bit about this last week, that they were trying to go plastic free with these stainless steel beer mugs. Worked perfectly. People just carried them around. People left them on the drying boards when they left the beer garden. There didn't seem to be any problems with it at all.
So for Pickathon, for people who don't get a chance to go, is any of this stuff like is it viewable or archived or recorded? If people miss it, are they able to watch any of it?
You know, there were a lot of little video projects going on around there, including a super secret stage that was kind of tucked up into the woods. And it was down a path that had no trespassing signs. And then there was a giant plastic tiger that was. That was fueled by a generator and a motion sensor.
Where is it?
it's like Disneyland for music fans, is what I wrote this morning. It's, you know, there's just like,
is this when you were
attractions and new rides every year?
Is this when you were driving the giant red shark with a trunk full of Amels you know, and a salt shaker of cocaine? Jesus. All right.
But anyway, so the tiger was hooked up to a motion sensor, so at night whenever anybody walked by the tiger, it would light up the entire thing theoretically to freak you out. But a lot of the bands were going up there, and they were doing sets that were being videoed and recorded by some sound guys that just came in, and because they could work with Pickathon, and people would, you know, again, the musicians are just, they're hanging out all day. So like, oh, what? Go play another set in the woods and buy a tiger? Sure.
Yeah, because you know, it's like Blues Fest gets so much of the attention, you know, every year. And I know they raise money for some damn
this
thing.
This is the best music festival in this state.
But this really sounds like a thing that ought to, as successful as it obviously is and as many people as go, it sounds like it ought to get more attention.
And what's interesting is like somebody on Twitter that I know yesterday said, who wasn't there, said, you know, I feel like the year that I finally go to Pickathon is going to be the year everybody says, oh, you should have been here
last
year.
Yeah. That was, by the way, I figured out that this year was that year for Comic-Con. Because, you know, I keep trying to get down to San Diego for Comic-Con, and I keep failing because I always – Comic-Con never happens when I'm unemployed, ever. It always happens right before I've been fired, like in 2009, or it happens right after I've gotten a gig. So I'm never actually unemployed and with a little bit of money and able to go down to Comic-Con. But this year, I've come to the conclusion that this is the year that Comic-Con reached its tipping point and that it will never again – You know, everybody will say, well, before 2000, you know, 2009 was the last really good con. Have you been to Comic-Con?
I have, but it was so long ago that it was still about, you know, comics.
It was in a tent. It was just like in some guy's Winnebago out back where he wanted to show you,
exactly.
you know, X-Men and Honus Wagner cards.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, well, blah, blah, blah. there's a whole thing I was going to say, but it doesn't really matter. No. Except to say this, that this has nothing to do with anything, but from Pickathon to Comic-Con, I have come up with a theory, and it was based on a bunch of things that happened at Comic-Con this year. I have come up with, and I got to figure out a name for this, so we can all just be thinking about this in our spare time. I got to figure out how to identify this. I don't want to call it like the Emerson Principle because it's not really about me, but it's a Will Wheaton sort of algorithm that I'm working on. And my theory is that your proximity to Will Wheaton. In other words, you know, if you are able to just call him on the phone, like if you got his phone number in your cell and you could just call up Will Wheaton, the proximity, figurative or otherwise, that you have to Will Wheaton is a litmus test. It's a marker for your place in the geek hierarchy. So, like, if you know a guy who's really good friends with Will Wheaton, you know, you're however many steps away. If you yourself know Will Wheaton, you know, you're high. But if you have to go like 4 or 5 steps, so it's like a 6 degrees of separation thing. But it is really more about the level that you have attained in the hierarchy of geekdom. So I got to be. This is my theory now that is the definitive indicator, or one of the definitive indicators of your place in that sort of pantheon, in that world. So we got to come up with a name for that.
So the Wheaton Index.
See, it's a thing.
Something like
it's
that.
A thing like that, and it would be like that. It would be like that place on life. What's that website? The clout.com or whatever, where if you put in your Twitter username, it will actually determine. It's like a Q score of how influential you are on the internet.
I saw that yesterday for the first time, and I told somebody, I'm just too busy still Googling myself. I don't know if I'm old school and just, you know, just stuck in the past or what, but I'm just not ready for my Twitter influence.
Have you ever Googled yourself and then you see something and you want to, you know, it's either wrong or funny or whatever, but you want to somehow bring it to somebody's attention, but you got to find a way to make it look like you weren't just sitting there looking up your own name online?
Well, I'm really, really hard to Google because there's a much, much more famous Ryan White.
Nah, yeah.
But my favorite thing, like, there was last week, 2 weeks ago, Jeremiah Masoli, who was the Oregon quarterback who got kicked off the team, he hired a PR firm, and they put up a website to defend him. There's a SportsIllustrated.com story coming out telling his side of the story of all his crimes and punishments down at Oregon. But they had a list on there of media mistakes, and in that list was Wikipedia. You just kind of looked at it like, you know, you can go correct that yourself, right?
Yeah, the thing that I discovered this weekend is that it's Don just held up a piece of paper.
Oh, come on!
But you cover. Well, no, here's the thing: Don just wrote something on a piece of paper and then picked it up and showed it to me. But you did so in a way that your hand was covering whatever you just written. All I saw was like a scrawl of pink.
We do need to. To discuss our fine sponsor at some point.
Which fine sponsor would that be?
That would be Cleaning Solution.
Oh, you mean the Cleaning Solution
yes.
In the person of one Michael Beatty? Are you talking about the Cleaning Solution that can be reached at 971-533-3211?
Indeed.
Cleaning Solution that can do stain removal, carpet repair, perhaps have your upholstery, your stone, your marble tile, anything that your feet might touch?
That would be the one.
The one that can be reached at 971-533-3211?
Exactly.
All right, we'll do the full commercial for them here in just a bit.
Thank you.
My final thing here, I think it was Mark Twain that said that, you know, a lie can make itself – a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth gets out of bed and puts on its shoes. That conflates with your Wikipedia thing and with it – because I really wasn't Googling myself. But it was one of those things where somebody posted it on Facebook, and then I reposted it later on with a little sort of a, ha-ha, isn't this amusing thing. Somebody has updated – it's not even my Wikipedia entry. It's the Wikipedia entry for that damn band, that green jelly band, the heavy metal Three Little Pigs band. And they have now they have altered that band's Wikipedia entry to say that I am the guy who sings the not by the hair of my chinny chin chin part on the song, which is, by the way, a thing that I've been trying to quash for like 7 years. And so now you know, there's been concrete evidence that my denials are all for naught, that that's just been – and when I
die – Would you like me to do a blog post on OregonLive.com/music?
It just doesn't even matter because now when I die, that's going to be the thing that they lead you know, my obituary with. It doesn't matter how famous or not I am at that point, what I may or may not have accomplished. That'll be the centerpiece of the
obituary.
So
now, did you indeed
do
that?
No, 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 I didn't.
Why
no,
didn't you?
I didn't.
Why didn't you?
Sorry.
Weren't you good enough? Was your falsetto not good enough? Was it like your accents for leverage?
Nothing is like my accents for leverage, except all my other accents for leverage. You know, never mind. There's a whole story to be told with that, too. There's a... it's probably
you
a story.
You don't have to be able to do accents. You can go a long ways in this world without doing accents. Ask Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, look at Sean Connery.
It's a could
just go down a list for a while here.
It's a story I should probably discuss off the air at some point. We'll talk about it later. This is Dawn Taylor, kid. She's at the news desk right here at the Rick Emerson Radio
and
program.
Now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
It's getting late, so we should probably knock out our triple snuff watch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and this is your not single, not double, but in fact your triple snuff watch for Monday. Dawn Taylor.
Swedish mountaineer and professional skier Fredrik Eriksson died Friday while trying to summit K2 in Pakistan, his friend David Shipper told CNN in an interview. The incident occurred between 7 and 8 a.m. as Eriksson was attempting to become the first man to ski from the summit to base camp. And Shipper, who said he learned of the accident on the world's second tallest peak in a satellite call from a fellow climber. Eriksson, who is in his mid-30s, was at a place called the Bottleneck at an altitude of around 27,000 feet between Camp 4 and the summit. A Moab, Utah-based climber is his friend Shipper. He described the Bottleneck as a, quote, steep and narrow section with thousands of meters of exposure below.
Wait, and this is where?
This would be K2.
K2, is that, is K2 its own mountain?
Yes.
It's not a section of a mountain
no,
or something?
No, it is its own mountain.
Well, that's an uninteresting name. Why is it called K2? You mean, it's in other words... That's not like a phonetic, like K2 Verado Nictu
no,
or something.
No, it's the letter K.
K and
the
then two.
Yes.
Well, what kind of unimaginative tool named it that? If somebody discovered that mountain, right? Somebody got to name it. Why would you not call it Mount Peril or just name it after yourself?
I don't know.
All right, well, fine. That just sounds like a temp name. It sounds like some sort of a. Like a you know like a battleship type name until they
would
come up
like
with something
Would you like me
better.
To look it up on Wikipedia
no,
and
no,
tell
no.
you where its name
no,
came
I'm just,
from?
No, I'm just wondering. All right.
Eriksson was attempting to fix ropes to the snow and ice along the route. He lost his purchase and was unable to arrest his fall, Shipper said. Eriksson's body, resting at about 7,000 meters, will remain where it fell. His parents have requested it remain in the mountains he loved. Retrieval would be exceptionally dangerous.
I think, you know, because you always hear this, those guys who are climbing Mount Everest and whatever, you know, and then they die, you know, which is what happens when you climb a big thing made of ice. And it's actually so high and it's so cold and you're so exhausted that they just have to leave all those guys there. And Krakauer's written about that a lot about, you know, you just, when you're climbing Everest, you just... When you're climbing Everest, it's sort of like this combination rings in a tree, Hall of Presidents sort of a thing. But it's like the Hall of Dead Guys who tried to climb Everest before you because you know, there's just no way to get them down. I think that you should have to take some sort of a wacky item of clothing up to decorate them, you know, on the way up. You know, just, you know like as a sort of as a ritual, you know, it's like on your way to the top of Mount Everest or K2 in this case, that you ought to just you ought to bring some sort of you know, like a kooky hat that you put on one of the corpses that you pass on the way up.
Like at a party when you just balance things on your drunk friends.
Well, like when a guy falls asleep, you know,
yeah.
and then you write like I
like penises on his face with a Sharpie.
I was trying to think of something that wasn't penises, but really it's all just penises.
It's always when a guy's drunk.
That's what it is. You know, but just, you know, it's just sort of a little bit of local color. You know, there's a little bit of to liven up the trail for the guys who are going to have to be coming up in following years.
That's dignified.
Yeah.
British jazz drummer Jack Parnell, who served as bandleader on The Muppet Show, has died at age 87. Family said Parnell died at his home in Southwold in eastern England. He was musical director at British broadcaster ATV from the late 1950s and oversaw the music for the long-running variety show Sunday Night at the London Palladium, producing specials featuring Tom Jones and Barbara Streisand, and composed theme tunes and served as the musical director of The Benny Hill Show.
That's fantastic.
In 1976, ATV began producing The Muppet Show, a musical variety show with the cast of Jim Henson's Muppets. Parnell conducted the orchestra for the whole of the series' five-year run, although the ostensible band leader was Nigel, the Muppet band leader.
I don't think... Who was Nigel?
The Muppet band
leader. I understand that. Which Muppet was he, though, I'm saying?
The band leader.
You know what? They're saying the same thing over and over again isn't an actual answer. I'm saying, like, what does he look like? What is his physical characteristics? How would I know him?
Looks like a Muppet.
Yeah, all right.
And a band leader.
Because he's not the Eagle. Because the Eagle didn't. I think was part of the band, but didn't do anything. Was he the guy who looked like a Doobie Brother, where he had like the weird, he had like the mushmouth hat thing going on?
No, because I think that was the.
He was a saxophone
from
player.
The electric teeth and stuff. You're thinking,
well, were they not in the Muppet Band?
No, the orchestra at the beginning. It's time to raise the curtain. There was an actual pit orchestra.
Right, but was Dr. Teeth and the whatever not part
the
of
Electric
that?
Mayhem? No, they were different. They were a
they
different
were
stand.
There was no. Are you?
They were a rock and roll.
Are
band.
You bluffing, or you know demonstrably?
No.
Do you know definitively that there was no crossover between the personnel of the two music groups?
I am 99% sure that there was no crossover between Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem and the actual pit orchestra for the Muppet
Show. So this is really you're sort of bluffing.
No, I'm not sort of bluffing. I am sure. I may not be completely correct, but I am sure there is a difference.
All right. Well, in any event, so the guy who was the Muppet. The actual Muppet isn't dead. The guy who was the musical director for the Muppet Show. He has passed away.
He retired in 1982, but continued to perform with bands near his home well into his 80s. He's survived by his wife, Veronica, two daughters, and three sons, two of whom are drummers. And finally, in our Snuff Watch, actress Patricia Neal, who won an Oscar in 1964 for Hud and later fought back from crippling strokes, has died at the age of 84. Neal had lung cancer and died at her home in Martha's Vineyard. The Kentucky-born Neal, famous for her husky voice, was already a Tony Award-winning actress when she made her film debut in 1949. Among her films were The Fountainhead and A Face in the Crowd. A year after winning the Academy Award, she suffered a series of strokes and had to relearn to walk and talk, but she returned to the screen and earned another Oscar nomination and three Emmys.
You know, I was just thinking about this. There was so much made, I mean, and rightly so, but I mean, she got so much attention for the fact that she did have the series of strokes and she kind of fought her way back from the, you know, from the brink of being crippled and being permanently incapacitated. If I were an actor in Hollywood, I would just research something that was demonstrably, you know, unprovable. You know, something you couldn't verify the existence of one way or the other, some sort of ailment or affliction, preferably one that makes you go all twitchy or slurred or something. I would just create it out of whole cloth. Just say that you had it, but then and then valiantly fight your way back to normalcy. You know, if you wanted to really lock yourself for an Oscar nomination or something, just say that you've been diagnosed with something that's not actually provable. Especially because with doctor-patient confidentiality, it's not like anybody's ever really going to be able to to give the lie to that. So you just you just find something that you can claim you have, for which the external symptoms can just be sort of fabricated, and then you say you've got it, and then everybody will do sort of teary pieces about how his most challenging role, that of survivor, something.
That might be a tad unethical.
Ah, it doesn't really matter. No one cares about those things. What was she in Face in the Crowd? I haven't seen that movie in forever. It's been like probably 10, 12 years since I've seen that.
She was the wasn't she the reporter who covers the story?
I don't. I'm not.
And
see,
basically discovers Andy Griffith when he's in a jail cell.
I'm going to have to go back and
watch
that again.
She follows his career and stays a long time. I think she was a little bit in love with him. But then, of course, he goes for the nubile young cheerleader.
Right. All right. Well, see, that's a movie that I have to run again. All right. There you go. There's your triple snuff watch from Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, I'm reading this now from Wikipedia. Three Little Pigs features a cameo by talk show host Rick Emerson, who was the schoolmate of Green Jelly. None of this true, by the way. Not a single syllable here that's true. who was the schoolmate of Green Jelly singer Bill Manspeaker. Emerson sings the falsetto line, "Not by the hair of my chinny chin chin," alongside Maynard James Keenan from Tool, who sings the rest of the chorus. So
I couldn't figure out how I read that, and I couldn't understand how you were a schoolmate of this guy who apparently is from New York.
And who's like 50, by the
way.
And
he's from the East Coast somewhere.
Yeah, so thanks a lot. And by the way, we've actually had that guy on the show for the soul because he actually because the guys in Green Jelly know Storm because they knew each other in L.A. So we've actually had that guy on the show for the sole purpose of just disabusing people of the idea that I sung. So this is going to be like that whole business of, of Eddie Haskell getting killed in Vietnam or something.
How did that start?
Don't look at me. And the great and terrible thing about that is that I loathe that song. I loathe that song, and not just because I'm on this program anyway, that I'm always getting tagged as being the guy who sang the thing, which is just absurd. Like, it's so absurd that I have there is no superlative that is sufficient to describe how absurd that is, or assured, if you're the mother of the lemonade stand girl. I have hated that song since the moment I heard it. And the guys in the band all seemed really nice. They seemed like just run-of-the-mill dudes. But the song is just loathsome to me on every level, which is why it's sort of great and terrible that is sort of it clung to me like some sort of informational barnacle. Before we plunge on ahead and continue the news and do the top five here, along with Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian, we should take a moment to talk about Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. He can be reached at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. And whenever I talk about The Cleaning Solution, Don always takes the opportunity to opine that my home just looks like some sort of an in-store, an indoor sort of sty.
I've never actually seen your home.
I'm just saying.
Your wife has invited me to the home, but you keep putting the kibosh on that. So
well, it's because of the filth of my carpets, Don. It's because my carpet is so off-puttingly grimy that I don't feel that human eyes should look upon it until I've had a chance to have it rendered clean once again. I'm just saying it's not just me. I would imagine that the average person finds themselves busy enough that they don't really have a chance to go through and adequately clean the carpet the way they need to, especially because it's not like it's a thing you can just do with a regular vacuum cleaner. You know, it's not like you just track some stuff onto your carpet and then it dries, like mud or dirt or, some sort of pet leaving, and it just gets into your carpet, it gets tracked in or whatever. It's not like you can just get the Hoover out of the closet and it's just going to take the thing out. You gotta get that done, with special equipment and knowledge and know-how. And that's something that Michael Beatty has at The Cleaning Solution. You give him a call, 971-533-3211. They can restore your carpet, your upholstery, your tile, whatever you might have in your house that your feet might touch, to its original state of glory and luster. And then they'll get you on a maintenance schedule to make sure that it keeps looking good for all the days of your life. Possibly not all the days of your life. I might be overselling it just a little bit there, but it'll look good. It'll look better than it does now, certainly, and you're not going to be horrified to have strangers in your home. And it's not going to smell. It's not going to be vile and off-putting, which it almost certainly is now if it's anything like my carpet. I live in a hovel. Well, in any event. Yes? Can I assist you with something?
No.
Okay. 971-533-3211 is the number for The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211. Please be sure to mention that you heard about it on the Rick Emerson radio program, The Cleaning Solution. There we go. Don Taylor at the news desk continues now with information so that ye might become more knowledgeable.
Chris P. Collins is being held in an Ada County, Idaho jail on a felony charge of possession of methamphetamine and misdemeanor malicious injury to property after Collins told Boise police that he attacked a soda machine with a hatchet because he thought someone was trapped inside.
That's awesome.
Boise police were sent to a motel on...
I'm going to get Mr. Pibb out of there!
And Dr. Pepper, too. They're both trapped. Boise police were sent to a motel on Broadway Avenue at 8:46 p.m. Sunday to investigate a report of a man carrying a hatchet. When police arrived, they found the Pepsi machine damaged and saw Collins holding the hatchet. That's when Collins told police he attacked the machine because he suspected someone was inside.
Did he indicate what sort of evidence might have led him to that conclusion?
I, I'm assuming that the methamphetamine had something to do with it.
Yeah, one would think.
Police say the 47-year-old Collins sat down when asked and peacefully handed over the hatchet to officers. Police say Collins also gave them the key to his motel room, where officers found two used syringes and a spoon with white residue that tested positive for methamphetamine.
Fantastic.
Police then arrested Collins and booked him into Ada County Jail. And here's his mugshot.
Is it awesome? Oh, wow. See, here's the great thing about that, is that he doesn't really look... How do I put this? He doesn't look like a criminal. He just looks crazy. He looks like a guy who's simply nuts. He also doesn't look like a real heavy meth user. We were talking about the faces of meth thing during the Legion
Maybe
of
he's
news.
New to it. Maybe that's why he went so crazy.
Maybe he inaccurately judged his tolerance to that particular drug. Jesus, God. Let me ask you this.
He looks like he ought to be an extra in Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
He really does.
I thought you was a horny toad.
Does Mr. Pibb have exactly the same taste as Dr. Pepper? Are they, in fact, the same beverage? Ryan White from The Oregonian.
Yes.
Is that now? Do you know that that's true?
I can't tell you the last time I had a Mr. Pibb.
I don't
or
know.
Or a Dr. Pepper.
See, here's my thing.
I've probably had an RC Cola since the last time I had a Mr. Pibb or a Dr. Pepper.
Okay, just before we go one step further, let me ask you about this. Are you from the Northwest? Are you from Portland or are you from elsewhere? Where are you from?
Michigan.
Okay, that's right. I knew that. So Michigan. RC Cola, is that a thing that they have in Michigan, or is it largely a southern and northwest phenomenon?
I don't think they have it anymore. Like, I'm always shocked when I go into McMinniman's and try to order a Coke, and like, well, we have RC.
Right.
And we definitely had it growing up. My grandparents had a garden center campground area in the Upper Peninsula, and they had this big store, and they had, you know, they had glass bottles of RC and glass bottles of Orange Crush. And
I
love when I can get stuff in a glass bottle.
If I were to ask you to rank the following three beverages, first, second, and third, and the first being the best, in terms of their relative coolness or hipness, RC, Coke, Pepsi. How would you rank those?
Coke, Pepsi, RC.
It must just be me, because I was under the assumption that RC, just in terms of sheer like hip points, that you that RC was at the top of the list.
But RC never tried to teach the world to sing.
RC was one of those sodas when I was growing up that they sold it in Southern California, but no one ever drank it. It was something you bought if you couldn't afford like real soda.
It's like the Hydrox of it's the Hydrox of sodas.
It was poor people.
It's like the
soda.
Original Costco brand or something like that. Like, it was the original generic in my mind.
I see. I was always understand that RC was one of those things if one had the ability to order it, one did so because it made you look as though you were cut from a slightly different cloth, that you marched to your own drummer, that you were a little more
the other scotches.
Exactly. That's like if you have Johnny
Walker
Blue.
Well,
maybe Kennewick, RC was cool.
In Kennewick, we were all about Fanta.
Wearing your Wrangler jeans and drinking RC.
I was more of a Green River enthusiast. Jesus, God, did you ever have Green River soda?
No.
Green River soda, which is, in fact, the thing that inspired John Fogerty to write the song. It is, in fact, about a beverage. It was not about a river of any kind. It was about this horrible lime, not even like a lime Ricky kind of a thing. It was just lime. It was just it was like lemonade, but it was lime.
But it was that fake artificial lime.
And with like half the sugar. So it was sort of like, it was like a sour lime alleged soda. That you would have. That my grandmother's refrigerator was always full of. It was like drinking Moxie. Like if you ever had a bottle of Moxie and you realize it just tastes like ass. It's just terrible. It's one of the worst things. I mean, it's like drinking month old Robitussin that's just been left open on the counter or something. That's what Moxie tastes like. All right. I don't even know what we're talking about. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
It's an idea being floated by some Republicans. Now House Minority Leader John Boehner. Is that how we pronounce his name? Boehner.
If you'd like to be amusing, yes.
How is it actually pronounced?
I believe it's Boehner.
Boehner.
But, you know.
Tells NBC's Meet the Press that he's not ruling out a push to change the Constitution's 14th Amendment guaranteeing citizenship for anyone born in the United States.
What cut is this? Let's see. This is...
I think it's worth considering. But it's a serious problem that affects our country.
God, he's another one of those jowly guys, isn't he, where you can just hear his whole face jiggling when he speaks.
You can also hear how orange he is.
Was that it? The House Minority Leader told NBC's Meet the Press the Constitution's guarantee of U.S. citizenship for anyone born in the United States has led to some problems.
This is which got promised.
In certain parts of our country, clearly our schools, our hospitals are being overrun by illegal immigrants, a lot of whom came here just so their children could become U.S. citizens.
Our schools and hospitals are being overrun.
It's like they're the undead or something. Like they're just, like they're just being besieged, the outside banging on the walls, attempting to claw their way inside. When he speaks to, he's got that Michael Reagan thing, which is, by the way, a reference that is dating me and which will be totally useless with probably, like, I don't know, another 6 months goes by. He's got that Michael Reagan thing where it sounds like he's got excess saliva built up inside his mouth and he just can't get it out of there. He can't swallow it fast enough. And it just sort of forms this low-key sort of gurgling thing.
In certain parts of our country, clearly our schools, our hospitals, are being overrun by illegal immigrants, a lot of whom came here just so their children could become U.S. citizens.
Like, you just want to give the inside of his mouth a good daubing, you know, with a chamois of some kind.
Banner tells NBC's Meet the Press changing the Constitution's 14th Amendment is worth considering.
Do we have is it another cut there? Let's see. Yeah.
There is a problem. To provide an incentive for illegal immigrants to come here so that their children can be U.S. citizens does, in fact, draw more people to our country.
It's like he's just getting emails directly from my mother-in-law and just reading them right off the screen. You know, just getting something with 1,000 carats in front of it and deciding to. Didn't you get one of those this morning? Did you get an alleged news story sent to you by a family member that had 50 forwards in front of the subject line? which is, by the way, that's one of the spam filters that I have set, that if I get something that has more than 2 forwards in the subject line, it immediately just goes into the trash. It's just virtually incinerated. I don't even see it. This is Dawn Taylor.
Police officers in Aurora, Colorado have been given a new regulation. Cover your tattoos or have them removed. Some people find tattoos a bit offensive or distracting, said Aurora Police Detective Shannon Lucy. The new policy started June 15th. I was very taken aback, said Aurora Police Sergeant Graham Dunn. I'm offended by it. I take it personally. Dunn said it's not so much the inconvenience of wearing sleeves or the heat that it generates, as it is being told that he looks unprofessional. It was often a conversation starter for people, he says. I never had anyone who was offended by my tattoos or taken aback by my tattoos. It was always positive. Lucy said Aurora Police will still hire people with tattoos, but they will need to understand when they come here what the policy is, and they will need to be covered. Officers have the option to purchase long-sleeve shirts for $30, makeup kits for $30, or a pair of slide-on half sleeves to wear under their uniform for $20 if they don't want to get their tattoo removed.
A slide-on half sleeve.
So they're all going to look like shooting guards in the NBA?
I was going to go a wholly different way. I was going to go a much more niche way, but yours is better. So this is where?
Aurora, Colorado.
All right. Well, this is one of those things that they always talk about where, you know, if you have a tattoo, people won't take you seriously in the workplace and it's going to be difficult to get hired onto the best jobs. But then I read there was actually a piece in the New York Times about this the other day that they said that the job market is just so awash in people who are covered in, like, piercings and tattoos that is a thing that is going to be gone by the end of the generation probably. Because you're not going to be able to find enough people who are, you know, whose body is unmarked in some way.
My thought is, though, that you probably shouldn't have too much problem being taken seriously if you're a police officer.
And you have a gun.
Wearing a police uniform. And you have one of those belts with a gun and pepper spray and
probably.
A taser.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, if someone, like, decides they don't have to take you seriously because you have a tattoo showing.
You've got larger problems.
Yeah, really. And, well, that person is just an accident waiting to happen.
Here's the thing that I think about, actually, along with the tattoos. I think about – this is like with the mullet, where occasionally you'll see a guy who still has, you know, the full bi-level haircut. Like, if you're in Lentz much, you'll see this guy. Often at Victory Bingo, actually, Dawn. But I wonder, like, you want to get the guy with the mullet on camera. Look, I'm no one to pass judgment. I had a mullet for many, many years in my when I was a ute. And it was just, you know, because I didn't know any better. But the thing is, you would think that everybody knows better now. You would think that there's some sort of mullet memo that went out that everyone received. And we all sort of, you know, like, you know the deal. So it is with tattoos. Like, I want to go find the chicks who are getting the tattoos, put in the small of their back, and just ask them, like, why? Why are you? And just
why
really,
now?
Yeah, like, understand the thought process. Like, what is it you're getting tattooed, and why are you getting it tattooed directly above your ass? Like, what is going on there? And I don't really ever understood. I don't understand what caused that to be a popular place for the tattoo, like, in general, but especially now, where you would think that it is just sort of, you would think it is understood that that is that indicates aspects of your personality that maybe you don't want highlighted.
Well, even earlier, before it became a cultural punchline,
yes,
that still was a tattoo that I believe was exclusively gotten by young women who somehow believe that they will never get any older or any heavier.
Yeah, well, and then it gets, and then you get.
So there's already a thought process that's not like going from B to E.
Well, that's like one of those. Like, you ever go to that the movie theater that's at Lloyd Center, and it's like I always, if I'm standing in line at the box office, I always end up behind someone who has gotten that tattoo at a much earlier, more svelte point in their life, and then they're always wearing like these sort of stretch pant things that aren't stretching quite enough, not stretching as much as everything underneath them is stretching, and it's just, and the tattoo has sort of become this weird. It's become this weird sort of Salvador Dali thing, except, you know, instead of hanging over a branch, it's just hanging over the division between their massive, massive sponge-like buttocks. You know, I'm just saying, it's, well, not even. Let's do the, pardon me, let's do the taser watch, and then we'll into the top five. Brought to you by MugshotList.com, where mugshots are updated around the clock by an army of robots. So if somebody is arrested, that mugshot will be up and available for your perusal within a matter of hours. Proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show. Please contact them. Tell them you heard about them here. Mugshotlist.com brings you today's Taser Watch. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I didn't do anything.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
Here's Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A 40-year-old man from Gainesville, Florida.
I'm sorry, from Gainesville where?
Florida.
That's why we was like, stop, stop, you're spraying the babies.
No, that's totally the wrong. And you even told me, you gave me the heads up. It's that the Florida button on my computer is flanked by numerous other the buttons. And so it's... when I go to press it, it's occasionally...
Can I start this one over?
No, because I just... You know, we've lost the...
I'm starting it over anyway. Florida, sounder or no. A 40-year-old man from Gainesville, Florida, is in jail after police say he smoked crack, kidnapped a friend, stole her car, and fled from officers when they tried to stop him. It started just after midnight early Sunday morning when police say Tommy Leroy Nobles began driving his friend's car without headlights, speeding, and running stop signs. The friend, Sue-born Jacqueline Watkins of Ocala, asked him to stop, saying she feared for her life. She tried several times to get out of the car, but each time Nobles would speed up. Watkins called 911 and told dispatchers she was being held against her will and thought she would die. Nobles lost control of the car and stopped just long enough for Watkins to get out. She demanded that Nobles get out too, but he drove off with her car and continued driving without headlights, speeding, running stop signs, and driving on the wrong side of the road.
Well done.
Gainesville police spotted him and began chasing him. Watkins finally crashed when he drove into a ditch. Gainesville police surrounded him, and one officer shot Nobles with a taser, but Nobles tried to pull out the probes. A second officer tasered him, but he still would not surrender. A third officer then tasered him, and he stopped resisting arrest.
That's fantastic.
As officers tried to subdue him, canine officer Richter wound up biting two officers who were not seriously hurt. Police said Nobles admitted to smoking crack and then driving the car.
There's just too much going on in this story for me to even keep track of it. So all of this happens. He gets tasered three different times after trying to pull out the probe the first time, and then the canine dog actually then bites the officers?
Apparently so.
All right.
Richter needs a little more training.
It really doesn't. It just makes no sense that this show doesn't take place in Florida. I mean, we really ought to just pick up stakes and just move there right now, because that's where all the news is happening.
Well, Nobles was charged with grand theft auto, felony kidnapping, resisting arrest without violence, fleeing, and attempting to elude law enforcement.
All right. Awesome. There's your Taser Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by MugshotList.com, covering 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. MugshotList.com. A with every Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. In just a moment, we'll count down today's top five. Top five songs to which Don Taylor broods. Before we do that, we have a question here via the Skype text, which is Rick Emerson Show. That is our name on Skype. Rick Emerson Show says, does Ryan White play Guitar Hero and or Rock Band? If so, what is his online name?
I do not. I have at friends' places. I do not have online name.
Is it one of those things that you just do when you're drunk over at some guy's house?
No, I should. I've always done it when I'm sober.
No, see, that's the thing. The thing I've learned about Guitar Hero, at which, by the way, I am terrible.
I'm terrible. I mean, we were doing a Ramon song or something and started booing us for lack of musicianship, which is an odd thing to happen in a Ramon
<That's>
song.
Awesome. Well, and just, did you ever meet people who are just freakishly good at that game?
Oh, yeah.
And you just sort of and you look at them with a mixture of sort of admiration and pity when somebody I have a an acquaintance who I will not identify who is just he's just like a Jedi with that. It's like he's a savant of some sort with Guitar Hero, and it's like, and you think to yourself, wow, that's awesome. What a sad, pathetic existence you must have. You know, it's not like I'm anyone to talk. I spend a great deal of my time just shooting zombies in the head on Xbox or whatever. But it's but the Guitar Hero to me seems to be that's a weird kind of rarefied skill that people have, and that seems to be a thing that you can't improve on either, in my experience. One either has Guitar Hero ability or one does not.
See, I went through a video game stage like in my early 20s, and I had a PlayStation, and my apartment was robbed when I was living over in Northwest, and I never replaced the PlayStation, and I just never kind of picked up a new gaming system again.
Because you realized it was probably for the best that you were not able to play.
Well, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, I bought my renter's insurance after the robbery, so I could replace my actual electric guitar, or that was stolen, or I could replace my video game system. And I used my guitar more than I used my video game system.
I actually had a friend of mine whose Xbox was stolen. It was the same thing. He said that he actually he resisted buying a new one, a replacement model, because he knew that it was left best unreplaced because it was just a time suck. I mean, just days and days and weeks and years of his life just vanished into that thing.
Yeah, and I've got so many of those already. Yeah. That I just got a record player finally for the first time in years and years and years. So now I've got this vinyl time suck.
I got the USB record player that I flagged on ThinkGeek that I got to order so I can archive all of my existing vinyl. I was looking at this massive collection of vinyl that I have a record player that is so great. It's of such high quality that it just outstrips everything else in my collection. But I've got a diminishing amount of vinyl and a smaller amount of time in which I listen to it. So I got two things. I'm trying to unload this record player that I've got. And this is just exactly the wrong time to be trying to do that because with every passing day, the market for selling a used record player gets smaller and smaller and people have less and less money. So I'm going to try to unload the record player and then get the USB thing and start backing up all my crap.
Well, I've already seen the problem. It's going to be like my wife and I, we had our anniversary last week, and it was like the most annoying Portland evening wherein we went out to dinner and then we went to Everyday Music and dropped $120 on vinyl and then went to Powell's.
Yeah.
So
well,
it's
Well, you're
going to hit all the cliches tonight.
Do that now before your child starts consuming about 80% of your revenue. Just make that happen now. What is happening in the Oregonian, Mr. Ryan White?
Oh, we've got the big Lady Gaga A&A piece coming up. She's here next week. Today on the blog, we have the only blog post I've gotten up so far today. We've got video of Justin Bieber getting hit in the head with a water bottle and a link to the smoking gun, which has pulled Iggy and the Stooges' tour rider, which they declare is the funniest, most entertaining tour rider that they've ever read. And
from when? What year would this have been?
Pretty recent.
Really?
I think, yeah. And it is – a roadie wrote it, and it is hilarious.
That's fantastic.
It's hilarious. It has to be semi-recent because it's making Insane Clown Posse references.
I have to tell you, speaking of Iggy Pop, I saw this photo the other day, and it was a picture of Iggy Pop in presumably in Detroit, I guess it doesn't really matter. But it was a picture of him when he was – I don't know, maybe 17, 18, and it was just, you forget, he's just, that's a guy who physically, who appearance-wise has become just such a parody of himself in so many ways.
He was pretty when he was young.
Why? Yeah, and it's
before he started cutting himself with peanut butter tops.
Well, yeah, and
there
comes a point where you got to put on a shirt.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, you just cover that up. But he was really he was an amazing looking guy. I mean, he was an attractive man, but he was also just really intense looking. And it was this black and white, I got to have to dig it up actually, it was this black and white photograph of him sitting on a radiator inside some just tiny little apartment, and then I think it must have been Detroit because out through the window you can just see this sort of industrial, half half industry, half wasteland, landscape behind him, and just sort of staring at the camera with this kind of glowering look. And you think about just what an amazing band that was. And then I was listening to Raw Power then later on in the weekend, and you just realize just what a massive amount of bottled energy there was at that point in time with that band.
Yeah. So. And and now their tour riders are hilarious.
Well, and I don't even haven't the bunch of guys in that band died over the years? I mean, I don't even know who the Stooges would be at this point.
I don't either. I think there's at least, you know, there are other original members besides him. I remember when they were getting ready to do something a couple of years ago, and the New York Times did a big Sunday profile on them. But really, I was just reading passages out of the tour rider, which are really, I highly recommend reading.
So you can read Ryan White online at OregonLive.com/music. OregonLive.com/music. You have that look on your face like you're holding in a comment that you're waiting to make.
No.
Really?
No. Yeah.
That means we can do this.
Five,
here's your top
four,
five
three,
from Monday
two,
on the Rick Emerson Radio
one,
program.
Fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
By the way, before we do this, I should say, speaking of Detroit, and I know you're from Ann Arbor, so it's not necessarily the same thing, but there is a... I'm sorry?
Not far away.
There is a fantastic... You're from the home of Andrew W.K. That's where he is from. There is a fantastic coffee table book that is coming out that is an adjunct to an art exhibit. Aaron Duran sent me the link to this. It is just the most amazing thing. It's a collection of photos called The Ruins of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just and I'm a sucker for modern ruins. There was a great art exhibit that came out a couple years ago where it was somebody just went through and they took photos of Chernobyl. Because, you know, in that town was like where they blew the air raid siren and everybody just bailed. And so Chernobyl is this entire city that is just sort of half-lifing away into nothingness, but everything is left exactly as it was the minute that people ran to escape the contamination. So it's like half full, you know, I mean, not anymore, but like unfinished cups of coffee, and like cigarettes just, you know, they were like, you know, is, you know, in a cigarette, you know, in an ashtray, and, school desks where the books are still open and pencils are still sitting on pieces of paper. And somebody had done this with Detroit where they went through and just found these buildings where they had either been, the buildings have been condemned or people have been evicted and nobody ever did anything with the building. And so now they're just sort of decaying away, but they still look occupied in some strange sort of...
Sorry.
Jesus, some strange sort of fashion. So it's, if you get a chance, you really ought to check it out. It's called The Ruins of Detroit.
There were these guys last winter who did this project with an abandoned house in Detroit where they iced it. They froze the entire house. They turned it into an ice sculpture top to bottom, basically, by just running water over it and over it through a cold snap. And the Detroit Free Press took some amazing photos of it and, like, kind of 360 photo technology and stuff that you can probably still find up on their website. But, I mean, you're in the middle of this, you know, once, you know, major American city, and you've got guys that are just, you know, this abandoned house turning it into, you know, this ice palace is the wrong word, kind of ice ruins.
It really is amazing, actually, because it still looks so, it is so, identifiably and demonstrably modern, and yet it's just disintegrating.
Yep.
It really is. It's a fantastic thing. This is our top five for Monday. These are the top five songs to which Dawn Taylor will brood on those rare days when she finds herself battling some sort of an unpleasant mood.
And I would like to, sort of as a caveat here, I realized when I started to put this together, I don't really actually listen to music and brood very often anymore. When I'm brooding, I do other things. I usually only listen to music when I'm happy or I'm working. So these are more like songs that I would listen to if I did listen to music.
So it's sort
of
a classic list. It's an overview,
yes,
of your musical brooding.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. These are the top five songs in a generalized sort of way in her life that Dawn Taylor would brood to.
Honorable mention is The Smiths. There's a Light That Never Goes Out. Because... basically, it's an honorable mention because if you're going to have a list about brooding songs, you got to have the Smiths on there somewhere.
You could have the Smiths on there everywhere.
There's no better band for brooding.
I've said many times that I don't really. It's not like I have anything against the Smiths. I just don't really get them. I don't get the. I just don't really understand the appeal. But you know, whatever. Not everybody has to get everything. My thing about the Smiths is they don't sound that depressing to me. The Smiths songs always seem kind of cheery, so I know that I'm missing something that everybody else hears.
You gotta listen to the lyrics.
Oh, see, and that's my problem right there. That's where it all falls down for me, because I'm not much of a lyrics guy most of the time. So I think that is why when people talk about how the Smiths is such depresso music, you know, it's like I would know chicks in high school that just would like sit in the art supplies closet and just huff Paint Thinner and listen to, you know, Meat is Murder or something. And I would just be like, I don't get it. He sounds happy. But maybe not. So maybe maybe that's one of those, it's one of those things where I'm focusing too much on the melody of it.
And I'm sort of late coming to the Smiths because, you know, whereas I was like sort of an art school goth, you know, wore a lot of black and moped around and was very intense, but I didn't listen to like gothy emo music. So it's only been later in adulthood that I've actually gone back and started listening to the Smiths and going, wow, they're kind of awesome.
I was going to make this observation about Morrissey's singing voice and about how it... never mind. It doesn't matter. Skip it. Doesn't matter. It's pointless. These are the top five songs to which Don Taylor broods, ladies and gentlemen.
Number five, The Pixies, Gouge Away.
Excellent. Hold on. Wow. Now, Frank Black lives here in Portland, does he not?
He does.
All right. And they broke up, ostensibly, for good, but then, like all bands, they, you know, got together for the obligatory, like, money-grubbing, you know, reunion tour or single or whatever, which, depending on who you ask, was either great or not so great. But you want to talk about a band that just... I'm not going to say they cast the largest shadow in alternative music. That's probably not true. I don't know if that can be quantified in any way, but I mean... You'd be hard-pressed to find a band that is name-checked more often by so-called alternative bands than the Pixies.
They're kind of the alternative what Pavement is to indie.
I mean, really, and just in terms of dynamics and the light, heavy, you know, the loud, quiet thing that made such a huge resurgence again in the 90s that seems to have sprung directly from Pixies songs.
Kind of an aside, but there's this new Shel Silverstein tribute record. And Frank Black does an amazing job with a cover of a Rolling Stone.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, when you say a Shel Silverstein cover record, do you mean of his songs?
A tribute record of his songs, yeah. There's only one poem on there, and that's because Andrew Bird, who does Twistable Turnable Man, didn't realize that Shel Silverstein was also a songwriter.
Yeah.
So he just adapted one of his poems to music.
That's awesome.
Everything is...
Is that out now?
Yeah, it's out now.
I'm going to buy that
it's
today.
It's really great.
I'm going to buy that before the show is over. I'm going to buy that the second we're done talking today. That's fantastic. Does somebody do Freaker's Ball?
No.
Freaker's Ball. Do you know the poem Freaker's Ball?
No.
Yeah, Freaker's Ball, which I don't even know if it was a poem or if it went directly to being a song. It was another Dr. Hook song. So Dr. Hook had on the cover of the Rolling Stone, which was written by Shel Silverstein, and then he had the song called Freaker's Ball, which is about an S&M convention. And it was one of those Shel Silverstein things that would be horribly offensive were it not just so jolly. Not unlike Dreadful, better known as Someone Ate the Baby, where it has the line... there'll be black ones, brown ones, yellow ones, red ones, necrophiliacs looking for dead ones, something, something, leather, something, something, weather, something, something. Everybody's there freaking at the Freaker's Ball. But it's just a whole thing about some weird deviant sex convention. You know, written by the guy that did Sylvia Sarah, Cynthia Stout. Excellent. These are the top five songs to which Don Taylor would brood. Don Taylor?
Number four, Every Day is Exactly the Same, Nine Inch Nails.
I don't even think I know this song. What album? Is this from something after The Downward Spiral?
This is after, it's not called Pretty Hate Machine.
It's not from Fragile or something, is it?
No. What the hell album is this from? I knew this morning.
It's it's got that classic recorded in a wind tunnel kind of thing that Trent Reznor had going on for a while. Wow. I wonder how many teenage bedrooms right now are filled with the sounds of Trent Reznor. Somebody just staring at a lone candle in the corner of the room, covering up the windows with a tapestry.
Yeah, see, this is the kind of brooding that I do when I brood. I brood very intensely.
Nine Inch Nails is all about brooding.
What the hell is the name of that album?
You could hurt your head from furrowing your brow.
Oh, and
these guys.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I mean,
Pretty Hate Machine. That's what.
Is this on Pretty Hate Machine?
Yeah.
Nine Inch Nails has fascinated me because they are part of, they're sort of a microcosm for the evolution of rock music. There are really no live instruments here to speak of. For the most part, all this stuff is, even the live things are just sampled and then synthesized and then, you know, repurposed in some way. It is indisputably rock music, and it gets played on rock stations now right alongside, Metallica or AC/DC or whatever. And there was a time when that would have just been unthinkable. The idea that a band that is effectively synthesizer-driven would be considered a rock act. God, I had this friend of mine in high school, who I will not name, because it's the thing where it's like, whenever I name somebody because I'm sure they're not listening, that's always when it turns out that they're listening. But I went to school with somebody. Her whole thing was to take that song, that Something I Can Never Have song, and just loop it over and over and over and over and over again while doing, and she would just like sit inside a closet and just write, you know, like manic stage poetry to herself. Which is what you do when you're in high school because it totally makes sense. Like, yeah. If you were to do that later on, they put you in a small cage somewhere. You do that in high school. It just goes with the territory. Ryan White, what did you brood to?
Oh, I brooded to a lot of Warren Zevon.
I was just going to say, I can't picture it being this somehow.
No. It was,
just there with your Townes Van Zandt records and
Townes Van Zandt, Warren Zevon, some good depressing Steve Earle, the just post prison record.
I almost put a little Townes Van Zandt on this.
You should do your top five brooding songs, like just necessarily now, but maybe from when, because you never got a chance to do the. Here's a famous top five we did that lasted for weeks because we had everybody in the building apparently, but Dawn do it. We did the top five songs to which you would seethe or brood as a teenager. So if you were like the 16-year-old you, it was like the top five songs that you would sort of mope to as a teenager. You ought to prepare that list. And the thing is, here's the great thing. You're going to find it much more traumatic and cleansing than you might anticipate. It's going to be horrifying, but sort of cathartic at the same time.
It might be the only time something like Nana off of Girls, Girls, Girls is ever going to make a list for anything.
Wow. That's all right. I used to sit and brood to You're All I Need off the same record. I'll kill you and put you in a freezer. You won't break up with me then. I'm sad. These are the top five songs to which Don Taylor would brood. Don Taylor, what might be next?
Number three is Weekend in New England, Barry Manilow.
Wow. All right.
Well, speaking of which, I went through this this heavy, bizarre Barry Manilow, Neil Diamond period when I was like 12, 13 years old. And I was also coincidentally obsessively in love with this guy named Joe Overstreet, who would not give me the time of day. And so even though I had no idea what relationships were about, because I was like 12.
You thought that Barry Manilow summed them up perfectly?
Yeah. And so I would just listen to sad Barry Manilow songs and brood about Joe Overstreet. So now whenever I hear this song, it's just burned into my soul. And I just spiral into self-pity and sadness every time I hear this song.
How old would you have been?
About 12, 12, 13. Junior high school was really hard for me.
I would imagine the fact that you listened to a lot of Barry Manilow probably contributed to that in some way.
I think Nine Inch Nails to Barry Manilow and my ears just pulled a groin.
My ears just pulled a groin. That's the best thing anybody's ever said. I do love this song.
I love this song too, but God, it just depresses the hell out of me.
One of those guys that you can't even dislike because he knows it.
Barry?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He knows it.
No, he's aware. He has. No, he gets the deal. Really, one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life was Barry Manilow at the Gorge in, like, maybe 94. And then I saw him again 2 years later when he was doing that touring with the big bands. He was touring with part of Les Brown's orchestral backing. And just a fantastic showman. I mean, he is a guy, he's like Paul Stanley. He's like the easy listening Paul Stanley. There's not a single spontaneous moment at a Barry Manilow concert. Everything is planned out. The stage banter, the lighting, the faux sort of casual asides that he'll make, the little jokes that he'll, you know, kind of come up with, you know, on the spur of the moment. And I saw him a couple shows in a row, and they were exactly the same, done it exactly the same way. But really a guy who delivers every single cent of whatever you're paying for that ticket.
I feel the wind blow.
Stupid Joe.
Brave and daring. Feel my blood flow.
This is just making me sad for you, Don.
I could bring out all the love that I have.
I can't hear this kind of song without picturing South Park characters doing all of this.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Can't Smile Without You and of Daybreak. And Daybreak was then ruined for me by Serial Mom, the John Waters film, where she, like, I think she stabs a guy to death while singing Daybreak. Taking it up a step there at the end. All right. These are the top five songs to which Dawn Taylor would brood earlier in her life when she did that sort of a thing.
Number two, Hurt, Johnny Cash.
Well, of course.
In which Johnny Cash out-Trent Reznor's Trent Reznor.
Which, and whoever thought that could be done?
I wouldn't put anything past Johnny Cash.
No. Well, you know what I'm a sucker for? I am a sucker for, I was telling somebody this the other day, I am a sucker for anything that sounds doom-laden in a biblical or quasi-biblical way. Anything that has that sort of, like, Book of Revelation, you know, the apocalypse coming over the mountain, one must make peace with one's destiny because it's at hand. Any song that sounds like that, I love, just automatically. And nobody did that better than Johnny Cash.
Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become?
And it's so good. You know, here's the thing about Johnny Cash, too, is that when he had that kind of one of his many comebacks, but when he had the final comeback, which is like in 94 when he hooked up with Rick Rubin and did American Recordings, I was a little worried, actually, because it would have been really easy for him to become a sort of novelty act, you know, where there's some Lollapalooza dick, you know, which happened anyway, sort of, you know, where he could have become a thing that was just sort of a name check as opposed to an actual artistic revival. But because it was Rick Rubin, you know, he actually had the music and the substance and the longevity of his career after that to back it up.
And they did such a good job with those records of mixing them up. I mean, you got Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers backing him on one. You got a record where it's stuff like this, which is just so sparse and spare. And
then he went out strong, you know? And he went out with just a big kick to the collective emotional balls with his song, too. Liar's chair. Have you heard the final... the final album of new material that came out?
Yeah.
Ain't No Grave?
Yep.
That's one of those things where I didn't even know it was out until I saw it. I used the Napster service and I saw it there. And I went to listen to it and it was just... I mean, front to back, pound for pound. I mean, the final, however, 16 years, 15 years of that guy's life were just, I mean, probably the most productive he had.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm all depressed.
Well, it is brooding songs.
That was kind of the point.
Thanks, Don.
What have I become?
Well, the next one will pick you up.
My sweetest
friend. We're going to hear Cats in the Cradle next? All right. These are the top five songs to which Don Taylor would brood.
Number one, Metallica. And honestly...
I don't picture you brooding to this.
This is like a seven-minute long song, and the first 3 minutes are instrumental, so you could skip forward or do whatever you like, but...
Machine guns are worth brooding about.
Yeah.
I suppose. Explosions.
I mean, granted, it's a song about war, but it's also a good broody song.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, look, I certainly had my share of brooding to Metallica, where I would just sit there and I would, you know, listen to the Master of Puppets record, you know, and... It's that thing where it's like it's so over the top and so melodramatic, but in a way that meshes perfectly with the teenage experience.
Yeah.
In which, largely by dint of the chemistry in your brain, the fact that when you're a teenager you're like clinically insane, you know, because I think teenagers get a bad rap because teenagers are way smarter than people give them credit for, but they're also just nuts. And I don't mean that in a figurative, like, I think you are actually just out of your head. You know, but...
Well, you're going through these intense roller coaster hormonal surges, and then everything that you're experiencing, you know, you've never experienced before. So you have... Actually, absolutely no perspective
right.
at all.
And in the meantime, these idiots who should know better are explaining to you that these are the best years of your life.
Yeah, no, these are the golden times.
You know, it only gets worse after this. After high school, you have to get a real job, and then your life will really suck. This is awesome. You're like, really? It gets worse?
And there you go. Wait, I think we're actually coming up on a verse here.
I wouldn't bet on it.
There we go.
Oh, there we go.
Awesome.
Did you see them on that tour they did with Guns N' Roses?
I did. I saw the last show of that tour, actually. The Kingdom.
Do you remember them opening the encore with this, with, like, you know, in place of the explosions, pyrotechnics everywhere, and being a section away from the percussion bombs, which, you know,
that was actually
shifted my heart somewhere to the right.
Oh, I remember just seeing them. I saw them three times on the Black Album tour. And every time they would fire those pyros, and it was like you would feel your chest sort of cave in a little bit. That was actually, I was going to make that half-sleeve reference earlier. I saw the final show of the Guns N' Roses Metallica Motorhead tour at the Kingdom, where Hetfield had been all burned up.
Yep.
And he was wearing the half-sleeves because he'd been set on fire a couple months earlier in Montreal, I think. And they had the guy from Metal Church playing guitar, but Hetfield was out there back when he was still manly in some way, before he began just sort of... spending $40,000 a month for some dick in a Cosby sweater to tell him, you know, to feel more. Don't even get me started. When he had some vestiges of masculinity left to him.
Before he became Brian Wilson.
Seriously, anyway, all right, well, we should end this. Now I'm depressed. God damn.
Thanks, mission accomplished, Don.
All right. Yeah, Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We thank our guest Ryan White, read him in print in The Oregonian and online at OregonLive.com/music. Thanks also to Aaron Duran of The Week in Geek. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Monday, August 9th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. After a brief interlude, the encore begins next on the live stream right here at rickemerson.com. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.